Good afternoon, everyone. This is Noura Abou-Sitta. I'm Vice President for Development and Public Responsibility at ICANN. I welcome you all to the focus group on document translation for the new ICANN website. This was a focus group that we set up a few months back to really educate ourselves a little bit about our translation services, how much we currently do, how we do it, and what we need to do better in order to deliver our content to all our stakeholders in the six UN languages, and also keeping in mind the improvements that were seen on the ICANN website and how those improvements can be also reflected in the translated content. I welcome everyone here, in particular Christina Rodriguez, who's the Director of Language Services at ICANN, Chris Gift, Vice President of Online Community Services, Sira Noosh, who is one of the most active community members I've heard of and this time met properly, and I'm sure she will share with you more her affiliation with the different groups within ICANN. And Jana is the Director of Global Content and Social Media Engagement at ICANN. Of course, I look forward to hearing from all of you at the end of the session, but to start with, I'm going to go over a little bit why did we do this focus group? And the reason why we did this focus group is that for the past couple of years, at least, since I've joined ICANN, there's been many speculations and demands and theories about what language services should do and what it shouldn't do. And it quickly became obvious that depending on your cultural background or geographic background, your needs for language services change. So whereas some people thought that just a simple translation, even if it's not very well written, would suffice, other people insisted that, you know, the quality of translated material should be as good as the original language. The discussion also covered a lot of the website, how much should be translated on the website, how much of a local experience should the user have on the website, and then, of course, it took us further to, if we translate the website, do we do it all through human translation? How costly is human translation? What are the other options? And so on and so forth. So we put together this focus group to really just look at what we have currently, educate ourselves a little bit about the different types of documents that ICANN generates, as well as the different translation methods out there that perhaps we should be more open-minded about. The deliverables of the group were basically to answer two questions. The first one is, what content should we see translated on the new ICANN website? And what methods of translation should we be using for it? But of course, the conversation took us to many other topics that are related and also very interesting. The participants of the focus group, we had 27 participants from 17 different countries, covering about 15 different languages, of which we had 6 active community members. So we tried to have representatives from different ICANN offices, different ICANN departments, as well as community members from all over the world. So we had 4 sessions for the focus group. The first one was really an introduction, explaining what the deliverables were. And then the second session really looked at what we currently do, what works and what doesn't work. The third session was a very detailed overview, actually, of the different translation methods. And then finally, we conducted a survey. And sorry, this is really light. Actually, we had 5 sessions. The very last, almost invisible line here is we did discuss the recommendations and then we circulated the document. So the survey that was conducted was really to determine what the community and staff would recommend regarding translation methods that should be used to translate general ICANN content, but more specifically content that goes on the website. The survey was circulated to the focus group and to ICANN staff, and we had 45 participants that completed the survey. Of course, the survey went through a very extensive list of the types of documents and content that we produce in general and ask which method of translation should be used for each kind of document. So I'm going to start talking a little bit about translation methods, and perhaps I can ask Christina, who's the expert here, to just give us a highlight of what the group concluded around translation methods.
Sure. Hello, everybody. My name is Christina Rodriguez. As Nora said, I'm the director for the Language Services Department at ICANN. It was a very interesting couple of months working on this focus group, where our expectations were actually where at the end of the focus group we were going to end up with a greater array of methods to translate and to localize the material. To our surprise, the conclusion was that most of everybody actually preferred that we remain producing translation and localization through humans. This means, you know, of course, that the quality is the most important thing on one hand, and also the proper use of terminology and the consistency on the material that is translated. Nevertheless, we will continue to review the options and the quality that we can attain utilizing other methodology that will actually add up and allow us to produce even, you know, more material and perhaps at one point add languages if that will be something that we are inclined to do. For the time being, of course, we will remain working on the five UN languages, the five non-English UN languages, and it seems to be as we are going to focus our translation methodology to stay through the human translation.
Thanks, Christina. And as we'll see a little bit later, the group did identify that there is a very, very small percentage of content that could be translated through a machine, but definitely not the content that is for the reading pleasure of our community members. Things like agendas or logistics could potentially be translated by machine. So I'm going to go over the survey findings real quick, and then I'm more interested to hear from the participants of the focus group about the recommendations. So the key findings covered the following. As Christina said, after the participants listened to details about different translation methods, they concluded that they prefer human translation over any other kind of translation. Like I said, machine translation could be used for agendas and schedules, but definitely not more than that. We had a very long discussion about crowd translation or crowdsource translation. And the interesting thing about crowdsource translation is that it's perceived very differently in different regions. And so for some regions, it could work potentially because people are very happy to work on a project that they don't get paid for just because they want credit for participation, whereas in other regions we can't really rely on it unless we hire people to do the translation. One of the themes that was covered extensively as well was that, you know, do we really need to translate full documents, or would a summary of a document suffice? Of course, further, you know, the content creator should then be asked to create a summary, and do they always have the time to do so? As you can see here, 38% were against translation of executive summaries, whereas 62% were for it. So I'm going to go over the recommendations. Very important to point out here that this was a focus group. It was more like a study group to see where we are now. So these are recommendations that we were able to deduce from the conversations. The participants checked them and they were okay with them, but in no means does it change the direction of what we're going to do. It informs us in our next steps, but I saw it more as an educational process, an informal discussion, rather than, you know, something that's set in stone. So the first thing was, and Chris, don't get upset about this, but one of the first things was that all content on ICANN.org should be translated in all UN official languages. Now, this is a request that I hear a lot, but people are not aware of what this really means in terms of cost and effort and manpower and all of that. And we'll go back to that in a minute. The second recommendation was that documents translated into all UN languages should be released simultaneously. And this we hear from community members all the time. Why do you release English content before you release translations? Aren't you prioritizing some community members over others when you give them access to information before? And so everybody agreed that all documents should be released simultaneously. Of course, that's a challenge because some documents are time sensitive and need to be seen as soon as possible, and translation takes time. Executive summaries of select reports and documents can be translated in lieu of the full document unless requests for full document translation are made by the ICANN community. The method of translation should always be tagged on the document to set and inform the expectations of the reader. It's very important if we choose to use machine translation or crowdsourced translation that we clarify this to the reader or to the public. We've had excellent projects in Asia with crowdsourcing, but you know, we require that any content that's translated there should be marked properly or should be tagged properly. In line with the current efforts, the Language Services Department should continue their work to create an inventory listing which documents and content have been translated into each language. What we found out from talking to our Language Services team is that a lot of the translations actually never make it to the website. So we have an inventory of documents that have been translated and sitting on a shelf somewhere, which is a huge loss of time and resource. And then the focus group recommend that the issue of document translation beyond the six UN languages for specific reports and outreach documents can be discussed with staff. And so some of our regional offices require us to create content or translate content into languages beyond the six UN languages. And, of course, we're always ready to do that and to support them. So to start with, I'd like to ask Jana to give us her view about how realistic it would be to implement some of these recommendations. You know, in particular, releasing the documents simultaneously, and also the whole aspect of executive summaries versus full reports.
Thanks, Nora. We had discussed this as a team when we were part of this focus group, and we thank Nora for inviting us to be part of this focus group, about the challenges between timeliness and quality of translations and getting things quickly to the site. Oftentimes, we can't give the translation team, the language services team, enough time to translate because some of our content has to be put up quickly. So, for example, if we have an announcement that needs to go out, we don't have the ability oftentimes to give it to the language services team hours in advance to translate. So we balance the issue of getting the material out with waiting for translation. So there's some things that we can't wait to have translated first, that we do have to get out in English first and then wait for translation. That's a trade-off that's not ideal, but it's a trade-off that we oftentimes have to make, especially when it comes to getting announcements to the media. There's also the issue of social media, which has changed the type of content that we do produce. So you have larger documents that we can do in advance that can get translated, but oftentimes, for example, whether it's a tweet or a social media post, sometimes those things are not practical to try and get the proper translation, again, in a timely fashion. So these are the challenges that we work with in terms of timeliness, and we welcome the feedback of the community to give us some guidance on what you think is best for us to do, whether it's best to wait or it's best to not, in terms of getting that information out, because it's not just the, we have to deal with the media aspect as well and getting them information.
Thanks, Jana. And from experience, we've also noticed that, God forbid, we release a language before the other. Community members do get very upset because we've prioritized one language over another language. So I think that there's a lot of limitations or challenges that we face internally, but we need to find some kind of middle ground where the community feels like it's being informed together. Without compromising, you know, press releases and so on and so forth. Sirnoush, I was going to call on you because I have a question for you, but please go ahead and comment and then I'll ask you.
Thanks, Nora. Sirnoush Vardanyan for the record. The issue is of timeliness, being on timely manner, releasing of those documents is vital. Just a small example, in London we had Atlas II and we had about 150 ALSs coming to London, and the travel document, which is usually posted, English language was posted on time, but can you imagine other five languages when they were posted in September? And the London meeting was in June. So we should take this into consideration, at least not to be late. And the travel document for LA was posted only in the middle of September. So it's even before, people need a lot of time to go for visas, etc., and they need this document in advance. So this timely manner, it's very vital for community members as well. Thank you.
Sirnoush, regarding the other recommendations, how do you feel they would impact the work in your community? How would they help you? Would they help you altogether? If you can give us some insight on that.
Thanks, Nora. Sirnoush Vardanyan for the record. As you know, the region which I am representing, Asia Pacific, is quite huge, and there are tons of languages we speak. Just a small example, only India has 22 official languages, so it's really hard region to cover every single document in local language. One of the recommendations there, which we had, one of the outcomes of our focus group for translation of executive summaries and in favor and against, we had 38% against of executing summary. This is a huge number. It's more than one-third of the whole community. So we cannot ignore their expectations as well. So while giving executive summary, we also should consider that there are more than 40% of people who can't get enough information out of this. But it's again, clearly everybody understand that this is resources, this is time. There should be some solution to this. So some kind of middle, something middle out of these extremes. So that's my two cents for now.
Thank you. This is Chris Gift. Around the question of timeliness, while I do agree that with Jana that on news announcements and so on, it's certainly critical. But as Sirnoush said, on other documents, it's also critical, and there should be time to put those together. The issue there is, to be frank, is really around internal processes, and it's not with the language translation services; it's with the remainder of ICANN staff. When we have processes for document creation, I've seen frequently that language and the time it takes to translate documents is not included in that process. And so sometimes language is treated as an afterthought and therefore is squeezed in after the English language document has been produced. So I think if we to truly address the problem of timeliness, And just language translation in general, it needs to be embedded throughout the organization, throughout all of our document creation processes. But to be frank, that is a large task and won't happen immediately. And to be frank, also needs to be driven from the top.
Thanks, Chris. And actually, one of the benefits of the focus group was that we had a very good discussion with the comms team to see how we can improve internal communication or internal education to make sure that all staff understand what the process is for submitting translations, for getting them in a timely manner, and so on. So hopefully, as soon as we're back, we're going to be embarking on a new campaign around the ICANN departments to explain to staff what the process is. I mean, we did grow extensively in the past year, and I'm sure a lot of the new staff are not familiar with these procedures. Sarah Noosh, I have a question for you as well, and perhaps some of the other participants from the community can chime in here. Would the community feel if we translated only a summary, or if we created localized content for certain communities? I've heard from some community members that they would see that as us trying to hold back certain information from them by giving them something else. I know this is a conspiracy theory, but do you think that some community members would feel like we're excluding them from access to certain information by giving them a different kind of information?
Siranush Vardanyan, for the record. This is really very tough issue because complaints will always be there. Even we are doing great job, and we know that we are doing great job, complaints are always there. So we also should consider these complaints some kind of in a positive way. So this will give us some floor for improvement. To post the whole, if it's my just personal view. If the document will be posted fully in English language and the executive summary will be given in other languages, this may not be such an issue, a huge issue for community members that something is just hidden from them. So they will have access to the bigger document, to the whole complete document, and in case if there are some specifics they need to go further and to know deeper inside of the document, they can do this machine translation for themselves to find out more details. But the executive summary will be at least the starting point, because it's difficult to translate all the documents, and considering the pace of issuing of those documents, it's really impossible to have all documents fully translated into all six languages, posted simultaneously, posted on timely manner. So this is hard. But at least we should give them the initial document in one language and give summary in other languages for them to have a general idea. Thanks.
Thank you. I'd like to take a look at every recommendation in a bit more detail, specifically the first one, which is a pretty large ask, translating all of the ICANN.org and localizing it so that the users have a very local experience when they're navigating through the website. So I'd like to hear from Chris about, how realistic this expectation is, how costly it is, and so on.
Yeah, this is Chris Gift. So my team, if you don't know, my team is responsible for the website and helping the community manage their web assets as well, so that is the at-large websites and so on. This is a big problem, and an opportunity as well, so it's not just a problem. So a few other facts that may help. Right now, the website, we have roughly 37,000 items that are published on the website. So that includes a little over 17,000 web pages and then over 19,000 documents. And obviously, a lot of our documents are multiple pages, if not tens and twenties of pages. They can be very large and complex. So that's quite a bit of content. So when we talk about translating the website, one of the first questions I ask myself is, does this include historical content? And if so, how far do we go back? And also, or is this a go-forward strategy? So in other words, you know, English is what it is for now, and we start translating go forward. Out of all that content, roughly 5%, a little less than 5%, has been translated and made it to the website. So there is, as Nora had said, additional content that is translated that is not on the website. So give you a little context on why that's not on the website, and that is because the methodology that we have is a process where content gets translated and it goes to a web, what we call the web admin team, web administrative team, and then they post the content to the website. The web admin team hasn't grown in the past few years for budget reasons, and so they, as we continue to grow around them and we continue to produce more content, they have become a bottleneck. We're well aware that they're a bottleneck, and as are they, the poor people, and since they work long, long hours, we're trying to distribute content management so that other people can post the content directly and don't have to go through the web admin team. And specifically around translations, we're, as we move forward into a new model of translating content for the website, we definitely want to do that for the translation so that we can speed that up even more. And that'll help, I think, also some of the timeliness issue and some of the problems around that. However, if you think about the amount of content, so I said we have about 5% of the content that's translated. I don't know how much additional the team has translated. But nonetheless, if you start to think and do the math, the amount of money that it would take to keep up, not only to translate the past, right, the archives and so on, but then to keep up is going to be considerable. So even, I don't even hazard a guess, and maybe Christina can say, maybe is it 10% that we've already translated to date and are keeping up with? I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying out there. Even if it is 10%, so 5% is what's made it, and there's another whole set of 5% that's out there, which would make a lot of documents. That still means we have a team of eight that is only able to keep up with 10%. So if you want 100%, do the math. Right. So, and are we prepared as an organization to prioritize the translations to that amount? And I think that's just an organizational decision. But we have to realize the magnitude. And obviously more math would have to be done, more analysis would have to be done on the costs. But we have to realize the magnitude of what we're asking for. I think my last comment, and it's one I already touched on, is around process. I think to do this effectively, there has to be significant internal process change management within ICANN organization. And I don't just mean staff. I mean within the organization as a whole. You know, we have to think about not only how much does ICANN staff translate of staff documents, but does this apply to the SOAC websites? How much of their content that comes to us do we translate? Do we have to go back to them for permissions around the translations? So there's a lot of process work that needs to happen that we would need to work on. And again, there'd be a lot of change management that would have to happen, significant. And it's just something we have to, again, be recognized and be prepared to take on. Because I think if we just say, you know, we're going to do this and let's do some education, I think we will fall short. And I know the translation team, language services team, is well aware of this, as well as Nora. But I think we would have to do quite a bit of work in prepping staff and prepping everybody and then really getting on board. And then also realizing that this will take time. Change management will not happen overnight. It will take some time to make it through. So I think those are my comments for now.
One of the things that when we met with Language Services, and the meeting was really helpful for communications to understand the challenges that they face and the challenges that we face, and one of the recommendations that Christina and her team made to us was when we create pieces of content, we shouldn't give it to them as a fait accompli afterwards, that if it's possible to involve them, in, as you said, in the process early on. So, for example, we're working on creating some videos and some infographics for some departments, and Christina and her team had suggested, well, don't give us a script at the end. Involve us in the beginning so that we're much more involved, so that translation interpretation can be ready much more quickly, and that it's not as much of a challenge to translate it into those languages because they've been involved in the process. And that's something that communications needs to do better at when we can, is involve language services early on in that process, and that's something that we're working on.
Thanks, Jana. So one takeaway really is that we need to do a better job at educating, but also, like Chris said, there's a revision or even a rethinking of the process, not just around translation itself, but the content creation and all the supporting processes around it. Moving on to the next recommendation, which is around methods, I wanted to hear more from Christina about that in terms of how much have we tried to use machine translation so far, if ever. And perhaps I'd like to hear from community members as well, Siranush, if you've had experience with other methods of translation. So, Christina?
Sure. Well, we haven't translated any ICANN material utilizing machine translation, and there's a very specific reason for that. The material produced at ICANN, it's highly specific, you will say. I always say that ICANN is sort of a monster on its own when it comes to languages or terminology, because we... In ICANN, we create our own acronyms. We have a terminology that just becomes. We were discussing earlier today with a few members of my team, and we were thinking about it, and one word came just to mind right away, multi-stakeholderism. That word does not exist in the English dictionary yet. ICANN became, that word became at ICANN, and now it's used at ICANN. However, the word multi-stakeholder itself doesn't exist in Arabic, much less multi-stakeholderism. So those are the type of challenges, and going back to what Jana was saying, that we face, and that why it will be so helpful to and some of the production of the material, we are involved from the beginning so that we can address words and terminology that is existent or not, and it is viable to translate or not. We need also to remember that some material is translated and some of the material needs to be localized. The reason for localization becomes or comes to our table because you have to take into account the sensibilities of different regions, how to approach it, the specific material that you're translating. You know, where you localize, actually, you keep the content and the context of the material that you are providing in this other language, but in a word or in a language that is more appropriate to the country or the region for you, which you are translating. Machine translation for ICANN, it's actually something tough to grasp. Nevertheless, it's not impossible. We are very lucky to have grow into a platform which were used first, you know, as a single license. We work with a platform that is called SDL Trados. And as we grew into that platform, and that platform also grew and became better and better through the years, this platform also offers machine translation. But what this platform offers is a machine translation method where you educate the platform with everything that we saved. This means segments of previous translation, terminology, databases. So they are all reused, you know, and we configure these in a way so we can sort of penalize when a word is translated differently. And this helps us in consistency, which in turn, you know, equals quality. So we see in the very near future the possibility of putting through machine translation within the context of this platform that we use, of course, some documents like, you know, public common periods reviews, the conversations or that happen, you know, that the messages that go through, the questions and comments that the community offer to the public period. We are also hoping to use or reviewing the possibility of using these when it comes to agendas and schedules, as Nora mentioned, and maybe a few more things, you know, like transcripts. Those transcripts that they take a very long time, or they're very specific to produce, you know, from an audio file, if an audio file was lost or so, so we can produce that with a machine translation. And it's material that it becomes ready, available to the community, yet at a much lesser cost.
Thank you, Christina. Siranush?
Thanks, Nora. Siranush Vardanyan. For the record, I'm not surprised that the results of focus group related to method, the majority voted for human translation, because I personally have the experience of machine translation from English into Russian and Armenian, and if you ever try this, it's just the text is ridiculous. You just start to laugh because there is nonsense. So the vice versa, it's a little bit better because from Russian and Armenian, the English is quite close to the reality, but the when you want to do the opposite one, it's just nonsense. No need to do that type of translation and to share it, because people will not get anything out of that. So my experience is quite bad.
Thanks, Siranush. And this is one of the reasons why we discourage community members or some of the constituencies around ICANN to some of them install some kind of like Google Translate on their website or Bing Translate or whatever it is, and then they're very disappointed with the results, and we discourage our community members from doing that. If anything, machine translation should be done the more professional way, which is what Christina was referring to, basing the work on an educated memory that we have built from our glossary. And if you recall, last year we had a very good project to update all our ICANN glossary. All our memories are updated, so we try and be consistent with the terminology. I will call on Kelvin from our Singapore office to share experience with another form of translation, which is crowdsourcing, and this was a collaboration with KISA. Go ahead, Kelvin.
This is Kelvin Wong from the APEC Hub, for the record. Okay, so this initiative is in collaboration with KISA. The idea is to for ICANN staff and KISA to together prepare a set of documents that we think is important for the community to translate. Now, of course, I guess everyone has experience of trawling through our website, which has a lot of information. But what we wanted to do is to distill some of this information so that it'll be easier for the community to translate. Now, these documents would have contained background information as well as update to development on issues such as who is universal acceptance, for example. And of course, we have very basic materials like what is ICANN, for example. So these are a few set of materials that is really ready for download on our community website. I can show you the link in a while, when possible. And I'm just for download by the community. So we are trying to get community members from the ALS, our infrastructure, to do this. I'll be talking a bit more about this tomorrow session. So this is just a bit of advertisement for tomorrow's morning session at AP Relo monthly meeting. Yep.
Great. Thank you, Calvin. Again, we noticed this is from a larger development public responsibility department context. We did notice that specific regions have specific engagement needs. And so whereas the Asia office, for example, requires more languages to be done, and the crowdsourcing concept is much more acceptable and more feasible, in Europe there isn't that much interest in it. So thank you for your team to because you embarked on this project, and it's proving to be, if anything, a great engagement experience and very helpful for the community as well.
Nora, sorry, can I just add this, Kelvin, again for the record? The whole okay, the whole idea is that, as you can see, I think Siranush just mentioned about the 22 official languages of just India alone. So we have many languages, and let's say we talked about having translating into a single language, and then people will be asking, why not this? So why not Bahasa? Why not Hindi? Why not Vietnamese? Japanese? So we have that problem, and so this idea is really to share the cost of translation with the community. If you are interested to have it in your community language, then you help us translate as well, and then we work on this together. So the whole idea is that. Thank you very much.
Of course, one word of a disclaimer, always, any crowdsourced translations, we need to tell everybody that these are crowdsourced translations for legal issues. Siranush?
Siranush Vardanyan, for the record. And why not in Armenian, Kelvin, yeah? So I really would like to thank Kelvin. We, after London, we worked really hard on finding out what are the needs for our community, and as we said several times, it's really very huge and diverse. And we also are in the process of asking volunteers from community members to help us with this translation. Honestly, there is not too much enthusiasm there, but at least we from our perspective, there is a huge, great communication and partnership with our Asian hub as APRALO, and there is a huge support coming from our VPs all over the region. We have 5 VPs covering our region only, so you can see the diverse and the huge territory of our region. And we, just tomorrow during our APRALO monthly call, we will give this call for volunteers from community to help us with this translation of some key documents into local languages. Of course, this may not be for publish, I mean for the general people, but for ourselves within the community, it may be really very helpful to be shared.
I am in total agreement, Siranush. Thank you. Now, I'd like to touch on the last, is it the last? Actually, no, it's not the last. Before last recommendation, which is the localization of content, something that Christina mentioned a little bit earlier. When we started talking about localization, we realized that people have very different definitions of what localized content is. And it does range from translations that maintain key messages but are written in a different style to the creation of local content. So basically nothing to do with the source language, really creating a content to answer certain needs. And I remember that I had a conversation with Michael, who is who works closely with us from the GSC in Russia, and he said that a lot of the content that we're creating just is not very digestible in our area. So how can we create content that is attractive? And so this goes more into content creation rather than translation or language services, but definitely an effort that we can support because of our experience. But Jana, I wanted to ask you a little bit how localizing content, whether changing it a little bit but maintaining the core of the source language or creating something completely new, would affect your work stream? Is it too much to ask of the comms team and so on?
I think it depends on the piece of content. So, for example, on videos and infographics, more long-term projects, you would have the time to get language services involved in the process early. With things like announcements and quick blog posts or social media posts, it's much more challenging. I think that we need, again, to do a better job of working with language services to find those words that are not translatable. So we need to get better at using words that are much more universal, changing the type of language that we use. But in terms of the long-term projects, I would say for sure we have to do a better job of involving them earlier, and we're starting that process.
And would it be accurate to say that localizing content could compromise messaging sometime? Or, I mean, how much, I hate to use the word control, but how much do we have to... How closely do we have to follow this?
Again, I think it would depend on the piece of content. Like, for example, we're working on a project with contractual compliance now on an infographic, and having language services involved in the scripting of it helps us for them to highlight certain words that are not translatable. I think we can always find a word that can convey something that everyone will know. There's not, you know, always a word, but I think you can come to something that's pretty close. And I think if it's our responsibility, it's incumbent on us to make it understandable for the majority of people. We can't think of it as just English language and then translating. You know, I spoke to Christine a couple days ago, and we don't see language services as just translating. They provide content, and the content is only valuable if the majority of people can understand it. So I think that is part of, again, what Chris said, is involving language services early in the process.
Thank you, Jenna. Now, I know that one of the participants is Robert Fremmer. He's one of our vendors, and he's been working closely with the ICANN team and definitely an expert in localization. Robert, from your experience, how realistic are these expectations in the context of ICANN? Because you're very familiar with ICANN.
Hi, Robert Fremmer with BeyondSoft. A lot of clients... Robert Fremmer with BeyondSoft. A lot of clients that I work with have face exactly the same issues, not enough resources and budget to translate all the content that they would like to translate, and business priorities and requirements tend to drive a process or structure of where the type of content falls. And it often has to do with the longevity or shelf life of the content. That can change the investment or resource you'll put into a language. If the shelf life is a blog or social media, it has a couple day shelf life before it's outdated. That can affect the equation of how much investment to make. And but the strategies that are in the recommendations seem reasonable to me. The question is there different kinds of content that have a higher priority or a higher value to the community at large? Mm-hmm. And coming up with a reasonable formula or function that the community can support, that that's how the decision is made, so that it doesn't appear one language is being prioritized over another, mm-hmm. or one type of content is being prioritized over another. Legal content has a much different aspect for translation, and usually no localization applied because it's a legal document, where some of the other program guides, which are meant to convey a new program at ICANN, localization could have an impact on the understanding from the community.
Very helpful, Robert. And you bring us to the last recommendation, which is really around legally binding documents. So as we all know, the only legally binding documents in ICANN are the English documents. However, there are model contract translations that can be provided in the six UN languages so that the community members can understand what the contracts contain and mean. And they can only be used as a reference or a guide. Unfortunately, nobody's here from the legal department, but they were with us through the sessions for the focus group and just finding out what the details are around, you know, producing legally binding documents. The sheer volume of them is I was personally surprised. So to expect that we're going to translate every single contract that ICANN produces or sign is just not realistic. I think with this, I'd like to open the floor a little bit for a discussion from our participants here. And I'm looking at Sébastien.
Merci. Ce que nous avons droit.
Thank you. You think we get to participate in a discussion regarding the use of languages? I think we should seize this service since we're at it. I'll give you the time to grab your headsets, to find the right channel, to find a headset that works, and make sure that everything is operational. I would like to thank you for this presentation. It has been a wonderful presentation indeed, because all the subjects relating to the matter of general localization are included. It's not only about ICANN's website, but it's more general than that, and it is very interesting. So I would like to thank all the team for having worked on putting together this presentation, both from the staff and community volunteers who took part in this initiative as well. I think it has been a wonderful improvement of our stocktaking of the situation. I would like to go back to some of the items you presented. I am a champion of translation of executive summaries first. And I think that should lead to several evolutions in the way we work. On the one side, it will allow us to realize that 20 pages can go a long way and that it is not necessary for us to translate 100 pages. And secondly, that we should use words in English which are more easily translated into foreign languages. I'll just give you one example. ICANN organizes a town hall at the IGF meeting in Istanbul. They organized this last time in Istanbul. So I wondered, is it that we're going to the town hall itself? What does this mean? And I realized that even English-speaking people didn't understand what it meant. This is American English. It is not global English. So firstly, we're going to have to speak English, not Australian English or American English or Kiwi English. No varieties. That would be a huge progress. And secondly, when we get to choose words, I think we should try and find words that are less complicated or, in other words, more simply understood and then more simply translated. If we were to do all of this work, then it would mean a great progress, because even for those who have a hard time understanding English, being able to read something that's in simpler, between inverted commas, English would be better. I don't want to take up all your time, but then I also wanted to go back to legal documents. I know we cannot have documents which are reference documents in the language in which they are produced. It doesn't mean that only English. I don't even know how to say this in French, and I excuse myself for that. It's not only English that should be binding. All documents in all languages should be binding. If I create a document, then the reference will be French to me and not English, because that is my language and it's what I sign. It's a matter of reference. If ICANN goes on saying that the only reference is California and English and California English, then I don't think we'll get very far, and I think this should be considered as well. It doesn't mean that the documents produced by legal teams which work in English, that's it. That would be a reference document, but if other people work in other languages, then they should have reference documents in that language. Thank you very much, and once again, thank you all for having participated in this group. Thank you.
Merci, Sébastien. Seulement très vite.
Nora Moussita takes the floor. Thank you very much, Sébastien. It's just a question I have on documents, and this is a matter that greatly extends the work of languages of the Language Services Department. But now, I think you have just proposed another question, which is, why do we translate? Why do we interpret? Why do we have a service? Is it more than just a service? I know that Chris wants to comment on this as well. Thank you once again, Sebastian, but I'll go on in English, says Chris Gift.
Starting small with a broader range of documents, like the executive summaries, is a great idea, for no other reason that we should be writing those in English as well, and I think that's a good best practice for any document. I also agree with the English, and that is a something that people have been talking about for quite a while now, that we needed to improve the English. The English with which we write can be overly technical, overly dense, we use 100 words when 50 will do, so that we could. There's quite a bit we could do there, and training we could do to improve internally, and that will in turn improve the translations. Right? That'll. You know, when it comes to prioritizing documents, I agree with the comment earlier that we have to do that. To say we're going to do them all, I think, is unrealistic in the near term or even perhaps medium term. So a prioritization, if for no other reason, again, that the comment was made that the community would have a set expectation. They would know, okay, you know, when this document is produced, it will come out in 5 languages. Because to be frank, right now it's somewhat random, because it is staff dictated by the author. So the author says, you know, oh, I will send this to translation, or I will not send it to translation. And then the community perhaps requests it, or they don't request it. And so the content that gets translated is somewhat haphazard, which, as you can imagine, makes it very difficult to create a website when, you know, I don't know, or we don't know if this content is going to be translated or not, or when it will come. And so that ripples throughout the organization. So if we had a consistent rule around documents, that would help everybody tremendously. Merci encore.
Thank you. So Christina here is telling me we do have rules, but I think what we have to do is build on them a little bit and communicate them better and re-educate staff and take another look at the creation of documents. And I really like Robert's idea of you know, specifying priority, and priority could change. So this could be something that we revisit at ICANN meetings. You know, what is most important for you as a community in the next 6 months or in the next year? And we produce translations faster for those rather than not. Any other comments or questions? Well, I think, sorry, go ahead. Yes. Hi, do we have a mic?
Hello, everyone. My name is Liu Yu. I came from Chinese Academy of Telecommunication Research. We have an MOU with ICANN this July. And we have a cooperation with ICANN Beijing Engagement Center with Mr. Zheng Song. Yeah, we have translated some introduction of ICANN material into Chinese, and I send the material to Mr. Song Zheng, and as our result of cooperation. And since our team have followed the ICANN meeting and ICANN works for more than 5 years, and we look through the English materials and translate them into Chinese for our research and for our government, our community, and new TTLD registry and registrar, something like this. We found they can lose some meaning when the translation is and we also find that in ICANN's website and your official translation for some files, documents, and there are some maybe mistake or maybe misunderstanding the English and between Chinese, there are some misunderstanding. So since we are research, we are Academy of Research, so we can use our research to help the translation to be more correct. And though we are not a specialist on language service, but we are research on ICANN and internet governance and new GTLD, so we can do our effort to help the translation more correct, and we can give our effort to with ICANN to maybe train the local interpreter or something like this. And we can have, in last August, we have a workshop on the internet governance and the new GTLD. And we introduce our research and about internet governance, new GTLD, ATRT review team, something like this, the progress and the INA stewardship transition. Then to explain that to Chinese committee, and they think they have the more new, they get more new information. And for, you know that for some budget reason, not all the people focus, have interest on ICANN can go to this meeting. And so I think we can introduce the meeting to Chinese community after this this meeting in ICANN, or like in our in Los Angeles, and we can explain our we got the information from the meeting, then translate maybe to the Chinese community, or we can give our research results to ICANN website, maybe for Chinese version and the English version. So I think we have, since we have MOU with ICANN, I think we can do more closed operation with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're probably going to wish you didn't tell us this, because now we're going to be after you for help and some advice. But our team is a very open team. It engages very often with the community to update its glossaries, to make sure that our terminology is really what is being used in the industry. In some places, we discovered that terminology doesn't even exist. And so we're working on some focus groups or some work groups to help create the terminology. So thank you for this. You bring me really to thank you, because you bring me to my conclusion, which is really, why are we doing all of this? The reason why ICANN spends all that money and effort into language services and other programs under the development public responsibility is to better serve our community and broaden it. And one of the best ways to broaden our community is to reach them instead of having them come to us with as many languages as realistically we can. And so whereas initially we had a traditional approach to languages, we had 6 UN languages, now we're much more open-minded about how we can do it better elsewhere with less cost, because cost is a big issue here. Cost is a big issue because when you think of a certain budget, and the budget is being utilized for facilitating participation or broadening community, the decision to take some money out of the language services bucket and putting it into education, or taking it from education and putting it into next generation engagement, these are very, very difficult decisions that we have to make, and we base our decisions on community need. And so hearing you and hearing Siranush and experiences from the community really educate us, to plan ahead. So if there's no more questions or comments, I think we can conclude the session. Thank you again to all of those who participated in the focus group. There's one more comment.
Sorry, I went out and I had to grab a friend of mine who's very involved with the indigenous community. And I'm going to put him on the spot because he's very passionate about indigenous languages, and it's, we may not be the largest language groups, but if I can ask Tony to come to the mic.
Great. Hi, Tony. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Anthony Nigani, and I'm with Naralo. But more specifically, I'm trying to be a voice for Indigenous people, not just within Canada, but around the world, but focusing my comments on Canada. Within Canada, we have over 400 separate First Nations. We are separate mini-governments within a governance structure. So we have the Canadian government that governs our governance. But within those 400 groups, we have several languages. And out of those language groups, we managed to have one community get the ISO standard about 2 years ago. And so with that group kind of on the East Coast, I'd be looking to help them kind of start bringing the language to the domain name system so that they can start using the languages in their communities. Even though it's regionally specific, it's a first step in the direction to help them start having their, not only their language preserved, but also transmitted to the future. Because our philosophy is we plan for seven generations ahead. That's over 250 years. And that's what our languages are, because they're spoken languages. And it's our history is found within the language. Our knowledge is found within the language. So this is an opportunity for them to start coming to the global level and sharing their language, not only amongst themselves and preserving it, but with the rest of the world. Because even in my community, I speak, my community speaks Swampy Cree, but that's one of 25 dialects of Swampy Cree. And so their languages would be very specific to the regions, but to have it on a global level allows them to reach community members that may have moved out of the community for whatever reason to another part of the world. So this was a very interesting opportunity to raise the point, because throughout ICANN, and this is being my third meeting this year, and since I was introduced to ICANN, it's been ICANN almost every day. And so I would be looking for assistance, because within the First Nation communities, as with other Indigenous communities, they're not necessarily third worlds, but they're communities living in third world conditions in what can be called first world countries. And so there's that jurisdictional gap that exists, a gap that has existed historically since first contact, we called it. And so I'm excited to bring the issue to ICANN as kind of a doorway to start introducing the communities to the global discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony. That needs some digesting, you know, to say the least. Please engage with us. We should continue this discussion. The issue we're going to continue to face, which is, I think, the primary discussion point, is really all around prioritization, right, from the community to us about, we do, at the end of the day, have limited resources. But nonetheless, that's a problem that we face. We heard it also from, that there are 200 over languages in India, if I recall. How we address these all is monumental. But nonetheless, thank you for bringing it up. And please do engage with us on this. Please. If there are no other... there is. Hold on.
Hello, Narelle Clark here. I'm with the Internet Society and a few other activities around the ICANN piece as well. I just thought I'd throw a quick one in along the same lines as Tony's intervention, in that in my day job with another organisation called ACAN, that's ACCAN, in Australia, a consumer organisation, we have recently been running a project for the deaf community, and that's capital DEAF. where, of course, we, with our own policies for our website and all of our documentation, we produce everything in an accessible format so that people with disabilities can get ready access to all of our materials. The project we recently ran... it's close to completion now, surveyed a lot of the sign language translations that are available within Australia and looked at the quality of sign language translations and found a huge variation in the quality, as you've all been discussing today, with the Auslan translations. And so we have, this project is close to completion, but it will be producing a framework and a rubric for translation standards for Auslan translations. So if ICANN ever makes that next step to translating again all of these spoken word languages into the visual form for those people who have hearing impairments, then perhaps I hope our framework will be of some assistance if it translates. So I will circulate that one. Thank you.
Don't go. I have a question, actually. And forgive my ignorance, actually, in the matter of language, sign language. But how does it work? Is it because, first of all, it's a scary just the thought that maybe I am... My ignorance is not that much, and I'm thinking that each different language has a different sign language? Well, my understanding is that there is a universal sign language, right? No.
And there are many. Sorry, Narelle Clark again for the record. There are in Australia. We most of the deaf community will speak. They will use Auslan, so AUSLAN, mm-hmm. Australian mm-hmm. Sign Language. That is distinctly different from American Sign Language and from the sign languages mm-hmm. used in many other parts of the world. So the European forms. There are some common roots for this language, and there are also different dialects across Australia. So different,
wow.
There are different signs used in different places to mean different things. Much as the same, you know, I've actually been explaining the word furphy to everybody here this mm-hmm. week, an Australian word, F-U-R-P-H-Y, furphy, which is something that everyone thinks is absolute truth but actually is not.
Oh.
So that is a word that I use commonly that I think applies very well to ICANN and ICANN meetings. Rather, not ICANN itself, but ICANN meetings. But it is not a word that you have ever heard.
No.
And I'm sure there are many different sign language forms of this word as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have to come down.
Yes.
Yes.
No, thank you very much. And
thank
please
you
send
everybody.
Us it up. Thank you, everyone,
everybody.
For attending.
Yes.
I appreciate this meeting has come to a close.